everybody, welcome into our very first episode of The Mount. Myself, Mike Bernier, I'm joined by a longtime friend, fellow baseball enthusiast, my good friend Jason. Jason, say hello.
Hello.
Hey, there he is. I came up with this idea with Jason a couple weeks ago. I spoke to Big Jim, the producer and founder of the Huddle Up Incorporated. That's where you can find us if you have stumbled across us on YouTube or on any of our social medias. Huddle Up Incorporated, it's a group of guys who talk all things sports. We have obviously the Huddle Up show during the football season, which is Jim, student of the game Kyle Nash, Ernest EJ Christian, Matt Muheisen talking about the NFL. I do a show occasionally, the Five for Fighting, which is a hockey-themed show. Ernest does one like once every 2.5 years called And One, where he talks about basketball. Matt does one called The Pitch, where he talks about Philadelphia, Phillies, and soccer. So we decided to bring the Mount, and it's a pretty self-explanatory name. We're going to talk Mount Rushmores. Each week, myself and Jason are going to discuss a team. We're going to discuss our Mount Rushmores. We're going to discuss people who may be on the trajectory to knock somebody off of the Mount Rushmore. And then we'll obviously go back and forth. So we're going to start in the National League. We've decided to start in the NL West, and we decided to start in a spot where it made sense, the defending champions of the National League, the Arizona Diamondbacks. But before we kick into that, Jason, I'm going to turn the floor over to you, and I'll let you talk about yourself here for a few minutes. Jesus is...
Sorry, it says Arizona baseball fan. I was trying to get...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Here. I don't know. I can't get out of the way. There you go. Close enough. I'll go back to a regular. no background.
The brick wall, baby. Yeah. Talk about yourself and what we're going to bring to the ticket here.
Yeah, so whoever's watching or listening, I know a lot of you know me as Jigro or Panda. I'm a big baseball fan, always been a big baseball enthusiast. And actually, I did my own Mount Rushmores on Facebook about 10 years ago. And when Mike approached me with this idea, I was like, yeah, I kind of want to revisit that and just kind of do them all over again, since obviously a lot has probably changed in the last 10 years for multiple franchises. Yeah, here I am. I'm here to discuss who I think are my top four players for each franchise and maybe some players who are like off the radar that we personally, or we think that can end up on a franchise's Mount Rushmore in the future that haven't quite made it yet. But yeah, we're going to go through all the teams and should be a good time. I'm sure we have some different perspectives on things. And like personally, I'm down with analytics, but I'm also down with like players are humans and there's a lot of mental things that are involved. And so not everything is just completely stat based, but like I said, I'm a proponent of analytics, but not necessarily for this cause.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll have some analytics and stat driven things, but there will also be a lot of feel to these rankings. So what we're going to do is we're going to start the National League. We'll start in the West. We'll work our way back towards the East. The final team that we'll do in the National League will be your team, which is the Atlanta Braves.
Impossible.
We're going to get to them last. I'm going to save them till the end just to troll you. What we're going to do also with this, so you guys know, is we're going to do the five teams of the division. And then we were going to do an all-time team based off of players just from that division. So each division will approximately be six episodes. The five where we'll give our Mount Rushmores, we'll talk about them. And then we'll do a all-time team to be released. Maybe we'll put a poll up at the end of this thing and we'll determine which team would win the all-time team playoff. Just to see where we're at with that. Yeah. I guess without any further ado, let's get to what we'll do is we'll alternate here because I think a couple of these are going to be fairly similar.
We're going to have
my first name to start the Arizona Diamondbacks. You guys know him as Randy. I know him as the Unit. It's Randy Johnson.
Yeah. There's a couple obvious ones here. Obviously, he's on mine as well.
Randy's stats as a member of the Diamondbacks, he was 118-62 with a 2.38 ERA, a 1.068 WHIP, a five-time All-Star, four-time Cy Young Award winner, which he won in a row. He was the back-to-back-to-back-to-back AAU national champion for the pitchers of the National League. Finished in the top 10 once in the MVP. Had 2,077 strikeouts as a member of the Diamondbacks, a 52.6 WAR, and he led the league in wins in 2002 with 24, an ERA in 01 and 02. In his playoff career as a Diamondback, 5-1, 3-0 in the World Series against the 2011 New York Yankees, where he threw two complete games, a shutout win in the NLCS, and he got the win in the decisive Game 7 coming out of the bullpen.
Yeah. So some of these stats you just brought up, I hadn't even looked at before because I know he was like a shoe-in. But like, I didn't realize he has five Cy Young Awards, and four of them were consecutively with Diamondbacks. Like, that's pretty insane.
Pretty wild.
Like, his tenure there was only 6 years, it looks like, and he won four Cy Youngs, which is in a World Series. Like, yeah, bar none, probably the face of the franchise, even though he was with the Mariners, I think, for a longer tenure. But that's one of the things we're going to be discussing is, like, some of the key factors that we decide – or that we used to decide who we're picking. Tenure is one of them. And then just, like, sheer dominance, like, literally destroyed the league for four straight years. Unbelievable.
Yeah. I'll let you give your second name. I know you said Randy was on yours. Who's the next name on your list?
The next one for me, which seemed like a no-brainer as well. He's also kind of like the face of the franchise offensively, is Luis Gonzalez.
I do have Luis on mine as well.
You do? Yeah. So he was there for 7 years, and obviously that monster 2001 where he had 57 home runs and OPS 1.1, just like insane numbers, and then led them to the World Series, had the game-winning hit. Like, he's forever ingrained in history in that regard. So it's like, he's definitely their best offensive player. I think I was looking at stats like Arizona Diamondbacks top offensive players and WAR, like top 10, and he was up there.
So
along with one other person who you're probably also going to be on this list.
In 1,194 games as a member of the Diamondbacks, Gonzalez eclipsed a .298 batting average, a .391 on base percentage, 1,337 hits, 310 doubles, 27 triples, 224 home runs, 774 RBIs, 650 walks. He was a five-time All-Star, a Silver Slugger Award winner, had a WAR of 30, and led the league in hits in 1999. With 206.
Yeah, so he wasn't just a power hitter. He was hitting for average, and he was taking walks. He was getting on base, like, which is all you can ask for, really. And he ranks pretty much top two in all those categories for the Diamondbacks. So,
yeah, and like you said,
glad we're in agreement on that one.
The monster year he had in 2001, where he finished third in the MVP ballot, he played in all 162 games. He had 198 hits, 128 runs scored, 36 doubles, 7 triples, 57 bombs, 142 RBIs, 100 walks, 83 strikeouts for a .325 batting average with a .429 on base and a slugging of .688. That season alone, his WAR was at, I'm trying to find it, 7.9.
Yeah, it's a hell of a year, and unfortunately, that was the year that Barry Bonds hit 73 homers, and Sammy Sosa had, like, I don't know, 200 RBI or something, and he's never winning the MVP. But, like, It's unfortunate. Putting up video game numbers, and not winning.
Yeah, that year he finished third. Bonds had an 11.9 WAR, had 156 hits, 73 homers, 137 RBIs, 177 walks. Sosa with 278 points, only beat Gonzalez by 17 points. 146 runs scored, 189 hits, 64 home runs, 160 RBIs, and a 328 batting average. So
insane.
Yeah.
Poor timing for Mr. Lugo. And then, of course, after that, I'm looking at his numbers. He never hit more than half the amount of home runs he hit, again, the rest of his career. But he did have a couple other good years where he hit over 300 and OPS over 900. So
yeah, that 57 was the pinnacle of his power output. But he was still a doubles machine afterwards, you know, having 40 and 50 doubles in seasons shortly afterwards. So
speaking of doubles machines for the Diamondbacks, what do you think of Lyle Overbay? He up there?
I mean, probably not going to make my Mount Rushmore.
I'm pretty sure he had like 60 doubles one season, which is
pretty sure. I got
53. I don't know.
I got him in a stiff conversation with our good friend Tony Womack. Lyle Overbay, in his best season in Arizona,
actually didn't have a great Arizona tenure. And I apologize for that.
He hit 53 doubles as a member of the Brew Crew the year after he left Arizona.
Yeah, but he did play on the 2001 team and got that World Series ring.
He had one hit in two at-bats and a strikeout. And a World Series ring.
Video game numbers.
Love it. All right, my third. We're going to stay with the 2001 theme here. His tenure in Arizona was short and sweet, and he may be remembered more for a bloody sock on a cold night in New York. But I have to give credit where credit's due. It's Curt Schilling. 58 and 28 with a 3.14 ERA, 1.036 whip, a two-time All-Star, finished second in the Cy Young in two of the four years. Two top 10 MVP finishes, led the league in wins in 2001, and accumulated a 25.9 WAR as a member of the Diamondbacks in the 2011 playoffs. 4-0 in six starts with three complete games and a shutout for Curt Schilling. Man, that stat line, especially for what he did in the playoffs, is crazy. Because you think about it now, there ain't a pitcher that's throwing a complete game in the playoffs anymore. And he went out there every start in that playoff run and basically was a complete game waiting to happen.
Yeah, there's a couple guys I can think of that do that or that did that. Him being one of them, Madison Bumgarner.
Mm-hmm.
Like they just go out and throw nine innings like in the playoffs, and it's like nothing to them.
Yeah.
Then you got guys like Randy Johnson who are coming out of the bullpen. It's like, but yeah. Curt Schilling definitely had a great run in Arizona. I'm looking at a couple things. So yeah, he won. What year did Randy Johnson leave? Because Curt Schilling did win the Cy Young in 2000. So I'm looking at the wrong person.
He left. Schilling left for Boston before Randy left for his next destination.
Oh, okay, yeah. He was only there for 4 years. But still.
Because Schilling got moved on Thanksgiving Day to Boston. I remember getting ready to eat Thanksgiving dinner when I first heard the ESPN report that there was talks of Schilling being moved to Boston.
And he was traded halfway through the 2000 season.
Correct.
So that's like when the Diamondbacks were just like loading up.
They're like, we're going all in next year.
Yeah, I mean, they had some pretty sick teams back then.
Curt Schilling on July 26th of 2000 was traded to the Arizona Diamondbacks for Nelson Figueroa, Travis Lee, Vicente Padilla, and Omar Dahl.
Well, I mean, Travis Lee at the time was
Vicente
commodity, number one pick. I remember Vicente Padilla.
And then the trade in 2003 to Boston, the return there was Mike Goss, Casey Fossum, Brandon Lyon, and Jorge De La Rosa.
So Chris Schilling just got traded for a couple bags of peanuts, looks like.
Yeah, I was going to say, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of real depth in those trades.
Do you know, so he went from, I know he was drafted by Baltimore, then was in Houston for a season, then he went to Philly. What were the trades in those? Do you have those pulled up?
So his transactions are as following. He was drafted by the Red Sox in the second round of the 86 draft, was signed in May of May of 86. In July of 88, he was traded by Boston to Baltimore with Brady Anderson.
Oh, God.
For Mike Boddicker.
Mike Boddicker.
Yep, Boddicker. There it is. Baltimore traded him with Steve Finley and Pete Harish to Houston for Glenn Davis. And then Houston acquired him for Jason Grimsley.
Wow, Jason Grimsley. That was the guy that helped Albert Bell cork his bat or something?
I believe so.
The guy who, like, crawled through the air vents in the dugout?
Yes, because he was in Cleveland from 93 to 96.
Unbelievable. And so
that's probably what he was best known for, because his time in Cleveland, he was 8-6 with a 5.09 ERA and saving.
Oh yeah, he wasn't a very good major league pitcher. I think he ended up on Yankees.
Himself from a fucking suspension. Does he get a save for that? Does that go on his record as a save? Well, you really should.
Yeah, we'll give him a save.
Does Schilling make your list?
Yeah. So at this point, I'm thinking we have the same four people, but Schilling was third. And it was tough because I really wanted to take Brandon Webb.
He was a name that I sat here for like half an hour trying to find a way to get him on the list, and I just fucking couldn't.
Like, he had a great career in Arizona, Brandon Webb. He had a Cy Young, which is like – and honestly, his career just got cut short because of injuries – As some of us know, but
he pitched seven seasons in Arizona, 87-62 with a 3.27 ERA, a 1.2 WHIP, a three-time All Star, a Cy Young, a second place finish in a Cy Young, 1,065 strikeouts, and he led the National Leagues in wins twice in 2006 and 2008, and was 1-1 in the playoffs as a starter.
Yeah, so the thing that struck out – that's a good term to use. The thing that
stuck out.
Noticed was he had the Cy Young Award, and then he had two second-place finishes, and the 2 years he had second-place finishes were just like he had absolutely no shot, but he was clearly still like a top-three pitcher in the league. But like the 1 year Lincecum won it, when he was like insane. And then the year before that, it was, I just looked this up and I forgot already.
The year that Timmy won it, Timmy was 18-5 with a 2.62 ERA, two complete games, a shutout, and struck out 265. Brandon Webb finished second, had 22 wins that led the majors, had 34 games started, had three complete games, a shutout, had 183 strikeouts from Webb.
Yeah, so the other year was when Jake Peavy won it.
And Peavy was 19-6 and he was 18-10.
Yeah, and so like I'm not really looking too much at wins and losses these days just because it's I feel like that's more of a team stat, but when I'm comparing Brandon Webb and Jake Peavy's 2007 season, Peavy obviously had a better ERA overall. Brandon Webb had four complete games and three shutouts, which is like two more than anybody else in the top 10. And he also, his ERA plus was the same as Jake Peavy's, which is 158. But like Peavy just had
his real season. His whip was 0.1 higher though. Peavy's was like 1061. Webb's was 1189.
But then Brandon Webb's war is actually higher than Peavy's, which is ridiculous. But yeah, probably just due to a couple more innings pitched and the complete games and the shutouts. Because if you look at the Cy Young voting that year, another Diamondback was top 10. That was their closer, which was Jose Valverde, back when closers were still getting Cy Young votes.
He tied for sixth with Cole Hamels, John Smoltz, and himself.
Yeah, and his war was like 2.2, which is...
I think the shocking part in the 07 award vote was that Peavy won it unanimously.
Did he really?
He had 100% of the first place votes for a total of 160 points. Brandon Webb finished second with 94 points. Brad Penny finished third with 14. Aaron Harang with 10. Carlos Zambrano with 3. Cole Hamels, John Smoltz, and Jose Valverde had 2 points each. And Jeff Francis of the Colorado Rockies finished with a point in the 2007 Cy Young Award voting.
Oh, man, that's hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's unfortunate that I also couldn't find a spot to put Brandon Webb on here. He was a guy that, you know, looking at the stats, you know, like we just kind of did a quick deep dive on like just that one season alone against Jake Peavy, you know, and that's something where, you know, maybe that's another show for a different day where we pick years and did they get it right when it comes to the awards?
Back then they were wrong like half the time.
There were a lot of times that they were wrong, but there were some times where they were just flat out right. It's no matter what people think.
Of course, yeah.
Who's number four on the Diamondbacks Mount Rushmore?
I got Paul Goldschmidt.
Heavy sigh, but I also agree. Paul Goldschmidt is the fourth member of the Arizona Diamondbacks Mount Rushmore for myself as well.
He was like my second pick actually, but like just we weren't going in order or anything. Yeah. But definitely Paulie.
In 8 seasons in Arizona, Goldie played 1,092 games, eclipsed a .297 batting average with a .398 on base percentage, had over 1,900 hits, 267 doubles, 19 triples, 209 home runs, 1,122 RBIs, over 1,000 walks. He was a 6-time All-Star, had 4 top 6 MVP finishes as a Diamondback, 3 gold gloves, 4 silver sluggers. It's shocking that Goldie had to leave to win the MVP.
Yeah, well, that's kind of crazy, right? And it wasn't even like – it was like his like fourth year with St. Louis, and his age 35 year, he finally wins an MVP. It's like, what?
He won it, what, 2 years ago?
He won it in 2021. He
was 24 in his fourth year in St. Louis.
Sorry, 2022. My apologies.
So it was his fourth year in St. Louis and his age 34 season.
Yeah, something like that. Like
his stat line in 2000. This is the one year that I truly thought he probably should have finished better than what he did. And it was 2013 when he went up against Andrew McCutchen. You know, I know Kutch had a better WAR, 7.8 to 6.3. Goldie played in 3 more games. Kutch had 3 more hits, but Goldschmidt had 15 more home runs, led the National League in home runs that year, had 125 RBIs, which led the National League that year. I know a lot of people are like, oh, Andrew McCutchen stole bases. He had 27. Goldie had 15 that year.
Goldie could run, man. He had 1 year where he had over 30 in Arizona.
He had 99 walks that year, a batting average of .302 to Kutch's .317. Again, this is one of those years, looking at it, Andrew McCutchen got 28 points, 28 of the votes, first place votes. The other two votes went to the guy who finished third in Yadier Molina. So Goldie, in that season where he put up 36-125, a 551 slugging, and an OPS of 952 that led, all of those led the National League, he got zero first place votes.
And it's probably because the Diamondbacks, I'm guessing they were terrible that year, most likely 2013, right? Well, they weren't bad. They were 81-81.
And then it was 2015 was the other year he finished second. That was behind some guy by the name of Bryce Harper.
Oh, yeah, when he had that monster season, too.
Not every first place vote. Bryce, 9.7 war, 118 runs, 42 homers, 99 RBIs, had a 460 on-base percentage, had a 649 slug, and an on-base plus slug of 1.109. He had 124 fucking walks that year and hit 330. Goldie finished second, had 182 hits, 33 homers, 110 RBIs. He did have 21 stolen bases that year. He hit 321 and had an on-base percentage of 435.
Yeah, and I'm guessing what puts people like Bryce Harper and McCutcheon a little higher in the war is just because they were playing the outfield. I don't know. Yeah. I don't really know how much weight that has, but it's
outfield assists and things like that probably have to play a role in it.
Yeah.
How about the year he finished third? Did you look at that one?
2017?
Yeah. It's the one where Stanton beat Votto by 2 points.
Jeez.
That's the Stanton MVP where he hit 59 bombs.
Oh, yeah. They both. Stanton had the most ridiculous year.
Votto had 135 walks.
God, that's insane.
His fucking on base percentage was 454. He almost got on.
Do you know the record?
I don't know the record offhand.
I'm going to look it up real quick.
I really don't, but that's fucking absurd.
Oh, Barry Bonds, though. He was on base percentage like 61% in 2004.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be Barry, right?
Yeah, but like Votto's like top. Holy cow, he's not even top 100. Okay, whatever. I'm getting out of this. We're not talking about this anymore. But to today's age, that's insane.
If you can get on base at that high of a clip, that's fucking absurd.
And then on top of that, you're slugging high as well. Like, that's a great season. Goldschmidt just got unlucky. Look at it. There's a couple other guys that year that got pretty unlucky, like Charlie Blackmon.
Barry Bonds is 2004. His on-base percentage was 609.
Yeah. What is that? That's insane.
Good Lord. We'll talk about Barry in an upcoming episode. I don't want to go down that fucking rabbit hole right now.
You think
now.
He's on the Giants route, Mount Rushmore, really?
I don't know, man. Are we talking about the Brooklyn, the New York Giants, or are we talking about the San Francisco Giants?
Are we eliminating steroid users?
Yeah. Are we talking about guys whose heads grew six sizes once they left the city of Pittsburgh? Like, that's the case. We got a shot.
I'm guessing we're wrapping up with Diamondbacks now. Who do we have? We had Randy Johnson, Curt Schilling, Goldschmidt, and Gonzalez. We both had the same four people.
Correct.
With like Brandon Webb on the outside looking in.
Brandon Webb was the only guy that I gave serious consideration to.
Same here.
There was like the Dan Heron where it's like, oh, I wonder how Dan Heron's career looks. I always thought he was decent in Arizona. And then I looked and I was like, how could I put him on a Mount Rushmore when I have Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling doing what the fuck they did?
Like, yeah. So like for me, like statistic wise, I feel like another person that was really close was Steve Finley.
He was someone that was a last minute like deletion for me.
Yeah, like he definitely deserves like top five, top six consideration. Right. And then as far as like face of the franchise type guys, like I always think of like Craig Counsell because he won, like he was there for a couple of years, and like that dude just like He scored the winning run in the World Series, won the NLCS MVP, like had that stupid batting stance, like scored another game-winning run in the 97 World Series. Like, so those are just like a couple guys that like
there is some recognition.
There regardless is one, of statistics.
There is one guy that I wanted to mention, and I think we'll mention him on some other teams when we get there. It was Zach Greinke.
Oh yeah, Zach Greinke.
His four-year run when he was in Arizona, 55-29, with a 3.4 ERA in 114 starts. You know, I mean, it's Zach Greinke, and you know, obviously his strikeout numbers aren't going to be like these great things, but he struck out 683. He only walked 150 batters. Only gave up 91 home runs in Arizona. His ERA plus was 131. His WAR as a member of the Diamondbacks was 16.5.
Pretty good.
I mean, it's a solid, like, if he would have done, like, if that was his WAR and just getting higher as it went on, if he stayed in Arizona, I felt like he could have been someone who could have cracked this Mount Rushmore. I think it was just the lack of years in Arizona is kind of what did Greinke in.
Yeah. If he would have been there longer, for sure. Going forward.
Yep. That's where I was headed.
Yeah. There's a couple guys who I think will end up being on there. Maybe possibly. And if
career paths play the way they are right now, give me the names.
But like, in my opinion, if like Zach Gallen and Ketel Marte stay on the Diamondbacks forever and do what they're doing, they're going to end up top four in the franchise for sure.
Is there a way that Corbin Carroll cracks this list?
Oh yeah, yes, yeah, for sure. I mean, I wasn't really thinking that far ahead.
No, obviously not. But I'm just this is if you're looking at guys.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, obviously, if he plays his entire career, you know, at the level that he played his first year this past year at, he's a guy that I feel like you would have to have a realistic conversation that he could crack the code of being involved in the Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, he's already established himself as freaking damn near MVP last year as a rookie.
I mean, he's definitely the face of the franchise moving forward.
Currently, yeah.
I mean, I think that's a pretty safe assumption. I think, obviously, Zach Gallen, Ketel Marte, the other two names that you mentioned are both guys you'll see a lot of jerseys around the Arizona desert, but you'll see a lot more Corbin Carroll, I think, moving forward as well.
Yeah, people like Corbin Carroll too. He's got the haircut and then all that good stuff. Yeah,
he's got the flow. He's got the swag. He's got the cool story with mom and dad driving him to the game. You know, he said all the fun stuff. All right, so that is the Arizona Diamondbacks. That is episode one of the Mount. Jay Grow, you got anything to plug or share before we wrap this thing up?
Nah, man, that was fun.
All right, in the books. So you can follow me on Twitter at They Call Me Burn. You can follow Big Jim over at Big Jim Sports. There is a link tree to all of the Huddle Up stuff that you need. The store, if you're interested in buying any Huddle Up merchandise, as well as the feed for all the other podcasts that go on. Like, subscribe, thumbs up. Tell us that you like the show. Tell us what you didn't like about the show, as I do fireworks in the background, because if you're on a Mac, you have that option. But yeah, so that's episode number one of The Mount. We'll see you guys next week, where we will discuss the Mount Rushmore of the Colorado Rockies, right here on the Huddle Up Incorporated.